Welcome to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio. Honey, can you believe we're still in chapter 4 of Ecclesiastes? It's like our summer project on this one chapter, but it's been good so far for me.
Yeah, it is packed full of stuff that we didn't expect to find.
It's a chapter that only has 16 verses, so we went through verse 1 through 3, then we did 4 through 6, then we did 7 through 12. We're on those last four verses now, 13 through 16. Why do you think it's been so extended as we've drawn this out? What is the thing that you've been learning from chapter 4 that says we need to camp out here?
It is so full of richness. It's so full of stuff that we didn't expect to find. When we started this project, we thought, oh, we'll go through these chapters one at a time, and this will be a short project for us, not like the book of Acts was. It took us almost a whole year. But I think in chapter 4, we just found so much that is appropriate to the time we live in right now.
Well, it's the reason we chose the book in the first place to even talk about. This is a time of Ecclesiastes. We have talked about using this particular book as a solace in times of sorrows. Mm-hmm. And often that's when it's quoted, or when life's changes happen, the unexpected occurs. Right. You take strength from God knows he has a time for all these things, including sorrow, including loss. Mm-hmm. These are things that the human experience has to understand happen. We are going to physically die someday unless God decides to bring us back home to heaven directly, mm-hmm. which most teachings in the evangelical church hang on that promise that for somebody in our midst, believers across the centuries, will actually get to experience a personal encounter with Jesus while they're still alive. Mm-hmm. And that's a great and wonderful hope, but it doesn't change the fact that suffering still occurs now and we need to take it seriously. And we're talking about a king who shouldn't have to know suffering. Mm-hmm. He's had every advantage in life, and even he had to die. But my concern all through this book so far is that the man has chosen to die a slow death, mm-hmm. and he's making us wallow in it. Mm-hmm. That seems to be what we're getting from him. Why would God let a king who had everything whine at us? I think it's because we find ourselves in the heart of the king.
Well, you and I have talked recently about the situations that are happening in the world and in our own family, and how we can focus on those things and become weighted with the tragedy, the trauma, the hurt of it all, and only see that. And I think that's what the king has done here. He's experienced some trauma, some tragedy.
Maybe lost somebody
he
loved.
And he's focusing on that. He is not focusing, as you and I talked about, on the things that we really can be grateful for. And you and I took some time last week to actually write out a list of things that we are grateful for, to turn our minds, to turn the corner on the grief that we've been feeling, or just the stress that we've been feeling through the pandemic, through life situations that we are encountering. This is a reminder in the book of Ecclesiastes. For me, it's been a reminder. I have got to choose to be grateful and to look at the things that God has done for me, has provided for me, the ways God has loved me through the trauma, through the hurt.
And how he is loving
us.
How he continues to love us, abiding with us.
Yes.
Well, I'll talk to our listeners just directly for a second. Folks, you are going through things too. So as we talk about our experience, I want to make sure that you understand that we are praying this through with the lens of, we get it. God's got stuff going on in your life too. We don't want to ignore that or talk about our problems. I'm simply bringing up our real life because we do understand a little bit of what it's like to be under stress, how to walk your children through great changes, loss of job opportunities, things happening with school and colleges that shut down on them before they could graduate. We're experiencing that as a family too, and we're praying it through. And we know that there's nothing that we're experiencing that is totally unique. So in that regard, the author of Ecclesiastes is absolutely correct. There's nothing new under the sun. In other words, we're never completely isolated and alone. Others will have experienced something like what we're experiencing now.
It's reminded me that I could easily fall into the trap of whining. I could easily fall, and often do. I could easily fall into that and get caught in the space of, why is this happening? And I know that doesn't worry God when we get to that point. In fact, I think he welcomes those questions. But I'm reminded by looking at the life of Solomon that I don't have it so bad either. And I don't have to sit in the depression. Yeah. I can do something.
And we are doing something in this study.
Yeah.
So jump in with us, folks. I also think about God's grace and his mercy. We know intellectually that they're bottomless. You know, we can never get to the bottom of them. They'll never be exhausted. But I do wonder from time to time if God doesn't just get annoyed.
I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah. But he loves us enough to stick with us through all of our whining as we experience it. So let's go to chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. We'll just read that in a traditional modern version, which in our case right now is the Holman Christian Standard. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back at it later with a modern twist.
Okay, starting in verse 13. Better is a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer pays attention to warnings. For he came from prison to be king, even though he was born poor in his kingdom. I saw all the living who move about under the sun follow a second youth who succeeds him. There is no limit to all the people who were before them, yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. This too is futile and a pursuit of the wind. Now, earlier when we were discussing at the very beginning of this chapter, I said something to the effect of I think there are three distinct parts of this chapter that we will talk about, and we've done that. This is the third part to me, the king's heritage, basically, is how I look at it, and how I believe he could very easily be talking about his own father, David, who was born a shepherd boy, who came up through the ranks under King Saul to take over that kingdom.
And whether he liked it or not, he was an outlaw.
Exactly.
He was forced to go, in some ways, rebel against the authority of the king. The king wanted to kill him. Mm-hmm. So if the king had that authority, he would just wipe David out. And yet God said, you must rebel from that by surviving. Mm-hmm. So he became an outlaw on the run, not because he had broken any law of God.
He upset the king. Yeah. Well, and this talks about in verse 13 that a poor but wise youth, and we see a lot of wisdom in King David himself.
Yes.
And we see King Saul as being an old and foolish king, I think. But also this reminds me of Joseph. Joseph wasn't elevated to being a king, but he was basically second in command in Egypt. And he ruled over the whole kingdom for the Pharaoh. And we see that he came from a very poor situation where he was thrown in prison and sold as a slave and all kinds of things that could have put him in a very dark place and kept him there emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all of that. But yet he trusted God to move him out of that situation. Whether he became powerful or not, he still trusted God. And we see that the king maybe had been foolish, but then chose to listen to this youth, this wise youth.
You can learn those lessons from history. I hope the king is doing that. It also seems to me like the king is preaching to himself right here. Mm-hmm. He's in a coy way acknowledging, I'm the foolish king who can't listen to good counsel.
Yeah.
And he seems to be talking about two different youths, one who is good and wise and one who's an usurper. He's coming to take the crown. Maybe they're real people in his life. Maybe they're his sons. Mm-hmm. We don't know because there's so many offspring of these kings because of how many concubines and wives they were permitted. Who knows how many people are vying for the throne after this king? It doesn't sound like the current king is all that excited about the options.
Yeah.
In the case of Joseph, consider that he knew his inheritance as the son of Jacob. Mm-hmm. His entire identity as a youth was tied in with God's promise. Mm-hmm. The whole back half of his life, there wasn't another human being that he interacted with until his brother showed up that had any inkling of God's promise.
Right.
All he had was God's presence in the middle of a foreign land, a foreign culture, a foreign language, a foreign kingdom, a foreign theology. He was coming up in a land of pagans. But he understood where he came from, even if no one else did. His heritage that he passed on was in the context of a totally different culture that would not really be purged from the Israeli people for many generations. There was much idol worship that happened when Moses brought them out of bondage. But the man himself, he knew his identity. I fear that the exact opposite is happening to this king. The king isn't sure anymore about his identity, and he's asking tough questions of God. Or to the wind. He's throwing that question to the wind. As we've talked about before, it always has been the metaphor of the Spirit of God whirling around us, doing whatever it wants to do, whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. And it frustrates the king because he can't pin it down. That seems to be the same problem with the idea of what will come after me. He can't predict the future, and it drives him nuts.
So do you think that this king has so watered down his faith, has so infused his belief in God or his heritage that he doesn't really know right from left in the situation? He's not sure, is this really the heart of God or is this another idol that one of my wives or someone else of influence has brought into my life?
Well, the books of history throughout the Old Testament do complain about Solomon getting seriously led astray by all the other gods and idols that were brought in. Mm-hmm. So we do know that the rest of his life became far less focused on the person of Yahweh, personal relationship, the sense of I have an ear with God himself and I have his approval, probably got watered down badly over the years. Mm-hmm. And the wisdom. He was given the gift of wisdom, but we hear about that wisdom being applied to the needs of others. His wisdom was given to serve the people. I don't know that he feels that he has a whole lot of wisdom to decide for himself what comes next. So I think he trusted that the wisdom gift itself would be for the purpose God intended, but I'm not sure that he senses that the purpose God intended was for him to be wise and discerning about his inner life. Mm-hmm. Think of how many judges that are cornerstones of our American jurisprudence over the past few hundred years, that their private lives were totally in shards. Mm-hmm. But they were able to, with a theory of law, stay consistent with what they did in their role, in their identity as a judge, a justice perhaps, that have formed the lives of millions since. Mm-hmm. And yet they were deeply corrupt people as the truth came out later. I think he's experiencing this dichotomy, mm-hmm. that he's not trusting himself to be pure anymore. And he doesn't really want to say, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, I'm the sinner here, right. Like his father was brave in doing with his psalms. We have the sense that he's mourning his own loss of self. Mm-hmm. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. I also want to remind you that this Chasing the Word series on Ecclesiastes is available for free to you on our website. Just click the link on the podcast page that goes with today's broadcast. Each chapter comes with our special modern English translation and some great prompts for you to dig deeper yourself. And as I mentioned, it's absolutely free. Check it out at CompassionRadio.com. And now, back to our discussion. He doesn't really want to say, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, I'm the sinner here, right. Like his father was brave in doing with his psalms. We have a sense that he's mourning his own loss of self. Mm-hmm. So if we are in that position, is there anywhere else we can turn where we have the opportunity to actually get back to the person who is Jesus? For us, faith is in a right. person. Yeah. And you mentioned about whether his faith was at stake here. I don't know that the Israelites coming up through the Old Testament period would have considered faith the same way we do.
What do you mean by that?
They would trust the promises of God as revealed to them through the prophets. So it was always a one-off. You trusted the prophets by distance of time by saying, yes, their prophecies came true. Mm-hmm. God honored what they said, so therefore they were people we can listen to. They speak to us from the past. They weren't real good with listening to them in the present. So the present generations had a bad habit of killing their prophets. Yet their children recognized the sins and repented of those and said, yes, they were telling the truth. That was scripture. Mm-hmm. And they lived by it. But the idea of having a personal relationship with the God of the universe, it seems like there were few people in the Old Testament that really zoned in on that by instinct. Mm-hmm. People like Enoch, who walked with God so much that he was not, says the Bible. He mm-hmm. literally walked off on the path with God mm-hmm. and disappeared from humankind. And David, inhabiting the praises that God put in his heart, mm-hmm. he was taken up in worship. And there are prophets we speak of that were able to worship God and see things and visions in real time. Mm-hmm. Elijah and Elisha seeing things that no one else could see. Mm-hmm. That's a presence. That's a real visceral experience. And we say as believers in Jesus Christ now that we have an access. Every believer, every disciple of Jesus has that potential to enter into a place where you know that you know that you know
right.
God's right here and that I'm on holy ground.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the Old Testament kings or common people would have regarded themselves as being able to access that
mm-hmm.
or would anticipate in their lifetime that it would be possible. So I would say that their idea of faith is assent to what God has revealed and saying, yes, he is God, he is sovereign, but not personally my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something that had to evolve in the person of Jesus. We had to experience the suffering he went through and really think hard about what he was doing then and what he is doing now and wants to be doing in me
mm-hmm.
and through me.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think we can look at chapter 4 as we have with the previous three chapters and say, this is a warning for us. There's a flag that goes up and says, watch out.
Yeah.
Examine your own life and see the areas that you are giving in to the whining and to the complaining yeah. and to the, oh, we're never going to make it. It's all going to go black on us here.
If that's what the problem is, mm-hmm. I mean, if there really is a sense of impending doom.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other impendings that can really get us off rails, like the impending malaise that it's not going anywhere. We're not making any progress. Just give it up.
Mm-hmm.
That can be just as big a threat to a lively and vibrant faith yeah. as anything else is.
Or worse, yeah.
So the winnowing away of hope, just like carving it mm-hmm. piece by piece, so you're left with nothing but a resignation that it's never really going to be what you thought it might be or you hoped it might be.
Right.
Let's turn now to a modern read of those last few verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and we'll riff on that for a couple of minutes before we're done.
Okay.
Verse 13 of chapter 4. A well-prepared youngster is wiser than a stupid and arrogant king. The scrappy slave knows how to fight his way right to the top. He might even overthrow the one feeling entitled and born to privilege. That king will be left destitute. I looked out again over all those going about their work like always, imagining what will become of this young usurper once he succeeds at seizing the throne. There is no end to the people and their kings. They keep toiling and striving, most just to survive, some to conquer and rule. Different ambitions, same futility and frustration. Believe it or not, all that is actually in those original Hebrew verses. Why is it difficult to come down to what the story is that he's trying to say as the king? Because the pronouns aren't clear, and yeah. he's being cagey about who he's talking about. So when I was entering into that translation there, talking about who is he really dealing with here,
mm-hmm.
and who is he describing, it does not seem that he's describing the same person twice.
Okay.
He's making a statement about values first. Yes, of course, it's better to be wise and poor and young and looked down upon and at least have a pure heart than mm-hmm. it is to be a king and be an idiot.
Right.
And be somebody who is completely self-consumed.
Mm-hmm.
In that regard, I think he's preaching to himself again. He's quietly admitting, I've been that guy.
Yeah.
And yet he's also looking at real people and real futures that are lining up. Someone will come to take the crown behind him. Will it be someone he chooses, or will he have to fight it out? It seems like the king is worried that he's not going to have a great solution for this, and maybe he's worried that he doesn't want to. So I guess the last question I would leave with is, what is the king fearing, and should he fear those things? And should he fear at all? Look at him, listen to God, and then make choices about how to follow God faithfully,
mm-hmm.
and ask him to help you do it. I think every scripture is built that way. Who was being talked to? What lessons should they have learned that I can learn now, whether they did or not?
Mm-hmm.
So what's our takeaway at the end of this, Annie?
I think it's always a cautionary tale for us. We should look at our own lives, examine ourselves to see where we sit in this narrative. Am I a foolish old person, old man, old woman, who doesn't listen to the counsel of others, who just assumes they know it all and assumes they have the answers and assumes they know God's heart?
Yeah.
I don't want that to be the end of my life.
Yeah.
I don't want that to be the narrative that I leave behind. I would like to be a teachable person, even now, even in my late 50s. I want people to know that I am open to hearing from God through them as the Spirit leads.
Yeah.
I won't be a young, wise woman again, but I want to be a mature, wise woman in my later days and to be listening to the heart of God. Hoping and trusting that God is going to continue to speak to me as I seek him. I don't want to worry about the people that come behind me that will step into leadership as we go off into our older years. I want to be confident that God is raising up a generation behind us that is passionate about following Jesus and is passionate about serving others and working toward the kingdom and for the kingdom.
I think wise discernment also begs of us to listen for where wisdom can be found.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is in a younger person, to be willing to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're only willing to listen to people who are farther down the road than us, we'll eventually run out of people.
Yes.
We'll end up bitter because no one seems to listen to us because we're always right.
Mm.
And we're never open. We're never humble and welcoming. We're not loving mm-hmm. to those behind us if we assume that we know better and that they haven't gone where we've gone, so they don't deserve to have any say in what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird even for me as a middle-aged man to sit down and watch the news and see that there were a number of people being nominated for the Supreme Court that were younger than me. When you start seeing that happen, you think, oh, I must be on that far side of a hill. You know, is it all downhill from here?
Mm-hmm.
And you start thinking those thoughts. Is the world passing me by? Which become very selfish thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being reminded again by this chapter that God's saying, I'm speaking, I'll always speak, and I'm always young. God is a young God.
Yeah.
He is wise as all the centuries. He created the centuries, but he's always in the now.
Mm-hmm.
God's not an old curmudgeon sitting in an old library somewhere, just
right.
kind of grumbling about what's become of his people.
Right.
He is now,
mm-hmm.
and he wants us to love like he loves in the now. So I want to be a wise and discerning person. If I see wisdom and exuberance and youthfulness all in the same package, I need to praise that,
mm-hmm.
that God gave that to them early and helped to speak into that. I want my kids, I want my friends to be able to say, when I'm gone, he listened to me.
Mm-hmm.
The person that I'm celebrating is someone that loved God and was humble enough to love others. That's the only legacy I think I really, really want.
Yeah.
And I hope that we'll be willing to ask God for that heart to be that kind of person as he calls us home.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to happen unless we start getting busy doing those things in the now.
Right.
That to me is the takeaway.
Yeah.
We're at the end of our program today. So folks, this is all we got for you on chapter 4. We got lots more to come in chapter 5 and following. Thanks so much for spending time with us on Compassion Radio for this Chasing the Word series in the book of Ecclesiastes.
Wars may cease, absorbed in prayer and praise. His reign shall know no wind, and round his pierced feet, fair flowers of paradise extend, the fragrance of the sweet, yeah, ever sweet. Crowning the the Lamb upon his throne. Hark how the heavenly anthem drives. All music but his own. Awake my soul and sing of him who died for me. And hail the master's king through all eternity. Him with many crowns. Crown him the Lord of years, the potentate of time, creator of the rolling spheres, an ether piece of life. Oh, hail, Redeemer, hail, for thou hast died for me. Thy praise shall never, never fail. Throughout eternity. Crown him with many crowns. The Lamb upon his throne. monument and a crown.
Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. If God has enabled you to support His kingdom purposes, please give generously where you hear God's word preached, celebrated, and lived. We need you, and we thank you for everything that you do and every prayer you offer on our behalf. Let us know you're standing with us and that you're chasing the word together with us. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And you can find us 24/7 at our website, compassionradio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.